of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
That I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. She's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Hitting on 6 of 8 cerebral cylinders, doing my own stunt voices and discipline, making your parenting more fit, making your kids have less fits, and making your husband wear clothes that fit and match. I'm going to get into adult gear animals for guys. How many times when I walked out of the house, my daughters, Dad, what? Oh, Dad. What's there? Dad. Okay, can you be a little more specific? Are you going to wear that? What? My socks? No. Mom, did you dress him? Of course, I can always count on my sons to come down. Looks good, Dad. Looks good. Looks good to me. Put some ketchup on it. But I have ketchup on mine. Nice to have you here, and the doctor is in. This is Look Back Friday. Got the calls up there already. Sitting and ready to go. Andrew Krucek, the producer man, edits the calls. He's called some previous programs. And there's usually an issue, a matter, something in the call that I'd want to expand a little bit on, maybe explain more, or just simply go off on a tangent that I didn't go on the call. So we've got those calls ready to go. Now, where's my monologue? This happens. So I look at potential monologue topics, and I think, okay. Right. Okay, that's a good one. I'll do that one. So I shut this book, and then by time I do the intro to the show, I have forgotten the topic of the monologue. Well, here's today's topic. When you most feel the urge to say it, don't say it. I'm talking about hurtful stuff or nasty stuff or tit-for-tat stuff or retort stuff. I suppose if I could gather up all the people in my life that I would have said something to that I regret over the many years and put them all in one big paragraph, I'd probably start it out with, I take it back. I didn't mean that. And it was most likely to be said with a surge of emotion. Most of what we say comes from intense emotion, whether we feel we're being verbally assaulted or provoked, whether we feel insulted, manipulated, whether we're smack in the middle of an argument that's raising our temperature. We fire off. Later on, most of the time we wish we didn't. Wish I wouldn't have said that. But when the urge is there, emotionally, it almost seems irresistible, doesn't it? How do you not say it? You have physiology on your side. A surge of emotion doesn't last as long as you think it does. It usually peaks pretty significantly in a matter of seconds. It peaks, and then it tapers. Now, however slowly it tapers is up to you, but it generally tapers. If you can get past that initial surge, just keep your mouth shut for that initial surge, you will have more self-control. When things are at peak, it's very tough. It's very tough. It's almost like your mouth has a mind of its own. But get past that.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Ray, that's right. Well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut if it's an initial urge.
If you beforehand use this as a mindset, this is what I'm going to practice. I'm going to practice that when I most feel the urge to say something I'm going to regret, I'm just going to grip my teeth, clamp my mouth shut, just distract myself, do whatever I have to do, not to say anything for at least 10 seconds.
You know, it's the old count to 10.
Well, there's wisdom in that. It's a variant of keep your mouth shut when you most feel like firing it off. The saying is, you never have to apologize for what you didn't say. Keep that one in mind. If you didn't say it, even though you thought it, there's nothing to apologize for. Unless, I'm assuming my wife can know what I'm thinking, which I wouldn't put it past her. When you most feel like saying something that will be regrettable, and you know it, if this has happened before in your life, you know that this is something that is going to happen again. Prepare for it. Recognize, all right, anything I get involved in, any kind of argument, any kind of situation that is going to test my emotional strength, I'm going to have the mindset of keep it quiet for at least 10 seconds. Now, at the end of 10 seconds, you may still say it because you want to say it, because you think it needs to be said, because this person needs to be put in their place. The problem with all that is, even when you do that, much of the time it's still regrettable. You shouldn't have said it anyway. Even if you said it when you were calm, you shouldn't have said it. Because you saw how it landed. May have hurt somebody you didn't want to hurt. Maybe it isn't exactly what you think, but now they're going to think you think that, and you're going to try to tell them, no, I didn't mean that. I just said it because I was emotional. But you know as well as I do, a lot of people think, no, you weren't emotional. That's how you think. And it finally came out. Yeah, try to get out of that one. You're like a boxer on the ropes. You're trying to get out of it, but there's no way it's going to be believed. It's like the person who says, well, you know, he was half schnockered, and he said some things about me and my kids, and that must be how he really thinks, because, you know, liquor loosens up the tongue and makes you lose some of your inhibitions. Not always. Not always. That may not be how he thinks. It may just be his words were colored by the alcohol in his blood, but either way, people naturally think when you say it, you meant it. And even if you say, I don't really mean that, I was just striking out. I don't mean that, I was just getting too hot. I don't mean that, that was ridiculous to say. Some people may take some comfort in that, but they still have the nagging doubt. Yeah. I suppose I'm going to take you at your word, but I'm not sure that you really didn't mean it. Being hot and angry and emotionally fired up is no reason or excuse to say something. And when you do say it, later you may think, ah, that was ridiculous. I was just too hot. I should have kept my mouth shut. Yeah, but it's already been spoken. It's already out. I used to play basketball back when I was able to jump and run and play. Played a lot of basketball. Now, in basketball, bodies collide, especially if you play on a smaller court, which is what we did. We didn't play in a full court. Come on, we were 50 years old. Bodies collide. And there's 10 bodies on that court, and they're banging up against each other. And that can provoke. That can provoke an emotional surge. It really can. So way back when I had a lot more vinegar in my body, in my 20s and 30s, I learned to read the signals. That if I felt myself getting a little hot because somebody fouled me and didn't call it, or somebody pushed on me and didn't call it, or somebody deliberately crashed into me, stole the ball, fouled me 9 times doing it, and took off, yeah, you can you can logically say, okay, it's just that's part of the game. Yeah, but when you're out there banging around, your body reacts. And I knew there were times, fortunately there weren't too many, I pulled myself out. I did not want to say or do something because of my emotions at that moment. Now, it only took about a minute getting out of the game to get back in, and I'd be okay, I'd be fine. I wouldn't do anything stupid. But that was a lesson I learned, and I think you can extrapolate that to words. Know when you're about to erupt, feel it, and then do everything you can to shut your mouth. All right, when we come back, we'll get to your calls from before. Dr. Ray.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you feel as though life is flying past you? Are you desperate for a way to find moments of peace and quiet? Lord, teach me to pray. The free Ignatian Prayer Series will open your heart to His voice, to the peace you are seeking and the only love that fulfills the human heart, Jesus. God is calling you to true joy, knowing Jesus personally. Lord, Teach Me to Pray is free. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, click on the red box, order the Lord, Teach Me to Pray series now. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com. The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi. I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Thank you for joining me here. Dr. Ray Garrity, program Doctors In, Monday through Friday. This is the look back version of the program. Take a previous call here from Patrick from Washington, D.C., asking some questions about an adult child with mental illness, probably better called mental disorder, and medications.
35 years old, graduated college 2010, was an outstanding student. Career didn't take off, was depressed, got the help of a psychologist, I guess, in 2012, really more depressed, more difficulty with career. 2018 or so, was tossed out of the house that he was living in, because he was basically canceled by his roommates because he took a position against a homosexual guy who was visiting. And that threw him into a tailspin. He ended up attempting suicide, I am told, and from then was under the care of a psychiatrist. Moved home with us for about 5 years and seemed to be doing much better. And then, you know, wanted to move out on his own, which we encouraged, of course. Has ran into some difficulty with that. And about a year ago, seemed to be really almost sort of manic and He's had various medications, I believe, I know. I don't know what they are. We were so concerned about him last year that I actually made an appointment with his psychiatrist myself, because that was the only way I could assure that I would have a confidential conversation with, wasn't his psychiatrist, it was the head of the psychiatric practice. Since then, and my son doesn't know about that, but I told this guy, look, this guy under the care of your practice is really, is going in the wrong direction. The outcome of that was that, and I don't know that it was related, but the outcome of that was that he got a new psychiatric team, which I guess is a good thing, but he's been sort of very hostile to his mother and me last year. That's gotten a little bit better.
Do you think there's a mental disorder? Do you think it's more than just adjustment problems?
I think so, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not trained. I don't know.
Where'd the hostility come from?
We love him tremendously.
Where'd the hostility come from?
It's hard to know. Well, he thinks that all of his problems are the result of his upbringing, which, you know, we weren't perfect, but we certainly have done our best.
Has he always thought that, or is this just a relatively new perception?
I think it's a relatively new thing, but again, I don't know, really. He has two younger brothers who are twins. One of them has cerebral palsy. I think he's felt since he was a kid, he's 3 years older than they are, that
he didn't get his fair share of parental attention.
All the attention and all that. One of the twins is a super outstanding, highly successful professional. And the other, the guy who has CP, is also super high functioning, nationally recognized in various things.
So, Pat, I'm going to have to hurry up here. We got 2 minutes. What are you asking?
Just what would you do if you were me and you wanted to make sure you kept the lines of communication open, and we, other than we are praying for him, obviously.
I wouldn't let him mistreat you. That's not going to happen. Okay, mm-hmm. that's not keeping the lines of communication open. That's keeping the lines of nastiness open. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is, if he is seeing a psychiatrist, that's good. Hopefully they'll tinker with the medication. You said something that made me a little nervous there. You said he gets manicky, and I don't know. I'd have to hear the details on that. But if he's actually getting loose with reality, mm-hmm. and he kind of floats in and out of these states. I mean, attempted suicide on the basis of, at least as you described it, on the basis of a couple of guys not agreeing with his moral stance. That can't be the only thing.
Well, it was worse than that. They threw him out of his place. They canceled him. They ruined him in the circle that he was in. But I get your point. I get your point. And, the psychiatry practice, the one that he had, was just seeing him remotely. And they weren't even, I don't think they were monitoring these medicines as well as they should.
If you've got an opening.
Hopefully that's gotten better.
If you've got an opening with your son, get him during one of his non-hostile periods, maybe you can say to him, you want me to go with you? We'll see what's going on. Do you know what kind of medication he's on? That'll give you some insight into what they're treating him for, because you can obviously look and see what those medications are for. That's one thing. Is he working now? Is he on his own? Is he functioning?
He works. He's working for a startup company. The founder of which is a family friend who's known him since he was a child, and he's according to what I hear from our family friend, he's doing quite well at his work, which is really good.
I would also talk with him a little bit. Just go out to breakfast. Say, catching up with you, what's going on, what's happening with the business. Keep it focused on that and see what comes out. That'd be a way to do it. Real difficult to add much thoughts on a situation like that because it was general. There was much there that was social. Much there, perhaps, that was mental slippage. There was much there that was a relationship problem with the parents. So you'd have to peel back several layers of all kinds of dynamics in that situation. I don't know what Patrick can do if this young man is hostile toward his parents. It sounds like it. He, in passing, he said, well, he'll get very angry and upset with us and he'll do X. Well, if that's gurgling to the surface, what other resentments are there? Now, my guess is that I think he described, what, three kids they had, two of them pretty competent in their careers and their achievements, and this young man much more likely to bounce around. It's not unusual. The more children you have, the more likely you will have a child who, by their temperament, by their wiring, tends to make things more difficult for themselves. They are maybe slower to absorb your parenting. They don't like guidance. They are quicker to accuse. That's part of who, sadly, it's part of who they are. It's their way. And you didn't necessarily cause that. Obviously, you can react to it for better or for worse. You can make it ugly or less ugly, but the things that they do, like he was describing a son who pretty much is bouncing through life in a kind of a turbulent sort of way, and he's trying to figure out, okay, how can I smooth his trajectories? Well, to the degree he lets you can. That's the hardest part for parents when they've got an adult child, and this adult child is making just a lot of decisions that you can see the outcome of it. You can see the difficulties he's creating for himself, and you don't want to hear it. I'm convinced, I've become convinced, that navigating life now in our culture, modern, Western, American, technologically based, materially comfortable culture, is much, much harder emotionally, socially, and behaviorally, not physically, than previous centuries. Previous centuries, life was much more basic. I'm not saying I want to go back to that. I'm just simply saying that's a factor in so many of these young adults, or these middle-aged adults even, who are making a shambles and a mess of their lives, blaming their parents for it, and continuing to be difficult to reach. The culture is wealthy. It's materialistic. In many respects, it's not religious. It's entertainment-oriented. It breeds selfishness. It does these things. And I'm not saying, oh, man, it's awful, it's terrible, it's horrible. No, I wouldn't want to go back to 1822. But that is the reality of navigating this culture, and more and more and more adults, young adults, who are not navigating it well, don't see it. And they don't look to their parents. Like in this case, Patrick is willing to help his son. His son doesn't want it. I mean, that's what I read between the lines. The kid doesn't want it. And I'm still confused. I would have done a lot more exploration of this whole situation where, because his son was of a different mindset than his roommates regarding a gay relationship, that all of a sudden they turned on him and just shut him out and canceled him and just in essence socially beat him up. I would have to ask, what else was going on? Was that it? Because that's a difference of moral opinion. And yeah, they can act that way, but my spidey senses tell me there was other things socially going on with Patrick that his roommate said, we don't want to be around him. All speculation.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The Second Commandment,
You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The disclosure of a name in the ancient world belonged to the order of trust and intimacy, and so when God revealed his name to Moses, it was an extraordinary outreach to us, saying that we were called to an intimate, trusting relationship with him. And so we should always reverence this name as a great gift. We should obviously never use God's name to curse or to blaspheme or to berate others. God's name is meant to bring blessing. And likewise, the vain use. Vain means empty. So some of these expressions like, oh my God, or, you know, and so on, need to be avoided as well. Vain means empty, and those are using God's name as an empty kind of expression of exasperation. And then finally, never ever to use God's name to swear an oath falsely. God is the God of truth. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
You know, maybe we need to ask ourselves, do we really know Jesus? Maybe another way to ask that would be, how familiar are you with the Gospels? When I was living in D.C., I was on the plane taking a late flight home, sitting next to a young girl. She was probably 16, 17. I had my collar on, and we got talking, and she said, somehow in the course of the conversation, she acknowledged that she was running away from home and was in the midst of an awful lot of difficulties that were going on. Her story seemed to be remarkably akin to the story of the prodigal son, which we just heard this past Sunday at Mass, huh? And so I started to speak a little bit about that with her. And I said, you sound a little bit like the younger son in the story of the prodigal son. And she looked at me like I was from Mars. And I said, are you not familiar with the story of the prodigal son? And she says, no, never heard it. And I just looked at her and I says, oh my goodness, are you in for a wonderful evening?
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
A very wonderful woman I knew had four children, and all four died. And somebody went up to her one day, and they said, oh, what a pity. And she said, oh, no, what a blessing. If we don't begin to look at everything with the eyes of Jesus, you will become helpless and hopeless.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Now, why would I say something so dumb?
I don't know.
Thank you for joining me. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Let's get to this next call very quickly. Shelley from Washington would like her marriage blessed in the church. Now, you'd think, okay, what would be the problem there? Well, probably somebody else doesn't agree.
So I have been married for 22 years by a judge. I've been Catholic my whole life, and I don't know why I went. Anyway, now I'm looking at getting married in the church. Or actually, I went to get blessed, and they said, well, that's getting married. So, but I'm in really thinking about it. So we dated for 5 years, and he was the most loving person, flower every week, held my hand everywhere, sat next to me always, kissed all the time, and then we got married, and we also had premarital sex also. Then we got married, and everything stopped. Everything.
So wait a minute. All at once, Shelley? All at once?
Yes. All at once. Everything. Everything stopped. Everything. And in questioning him, you know, he'd be sitting in front of the TV all the time, and he was at the time practicing alcoholic. He has since quit, but no treatment or anything. But so everything stopped, and I would ask him, why are you even here? And he told me that, you know, if you divorce me, he told me this within the first 2 weeks, if you divorce me, I'm going to take half your house because it's community property state. Not having much self-esteem or anything, I just plain believed him. And I'd already lived there 10 years suffering as a single mom, paying all the bills. But anyway, so we've gone 22 years. And yes, it is my fault. I didn't do anything about it. He's paying bills. He's an okay guy, you know, nice enough. We shared a king bed side, you know, both on either end. I tried touching him once and he kicked me away. I tried grabbing his hand once and he pushed me away. Anyway, so now I'm thinking, I've gotten really into the church now since Easter. Gone to everything, done the holy obligation, which I never did all that before. I went to church, but that's all I did. So I'm.
Did you, Shelley, really did you go back to confession?
Yes, sir. Yes, okay. Sir. I've done all, I'm doing really good.
So you're back in
and
the
now
church.
I was going to church, but now I'm really in the church.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I assume that your question here is, my marriage has been miserable for 22 years. I allegedly have an out, which is it was not a sacramental marriage because even though I was Catholic, I just went a civil route. And if I get it blessed in the church now I'm really tied to him. So maybe this is my out. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I kind of know because he's been a great roommate. He pays a good portion of the bills. And, you know, I'm not looking for a another man. I mean, I won't because I am married. But I'm wondering if I qualify. I mean, if I should even, I should probably get a divorce. I probably should. But
what did the priest tell you when you went to confession? You told the priest your situation. And of course, now that you're fully back in the Catholic Church and you're living in a civil marriage, obviously physical relations are not part of the package here anymore. Is that where you're at?
Well, we got to have sex once, yes. In my 22-year marriage.
Oh man. Okay.
Yeah.
Living as brother and sister at this point is exactly the way you're doing it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Separate rooms. Yep.
All right.
For the last 10 years. Yep.
Well, some
so
might say.
What I'm wondering.
Yeah. What is your question for me, there, Shelley?
So I know I can probably go through the sacrament stuff, but. Should I? I'm not sure it's a good idea that I get the sacrament because of my marriage. It's not really a marriage. So why should I get that sacrament for me?
Well, you're living with the guy, and obviously you are living as brothers and sisters, which is what the church would teach in a situation like this. However, there are those around you maybe who would see this and just interpret it as, well, she's Catholic and yeah, she's gone to communion and she's living with some guy that she got married by justice of the peace. Okay, so apparently it doesn't matter to her how she got married, even as a Catholic. So the word is scandal. There are those people who would look at this and say, well, just another Catholic who's kind of doing her own thing. That's a possibility. Okay, there. I would suggest you actually talk to a real father. I know you tried to make me father, but I missed it. Okay, I really just don't have the ordination factor. So given that, you talk to a priest, sort through your situation. If you say to yourself, I fully intend to stay with this man till one of us dies, that's the way it's going to be. Assuming he's not going to cut out. That could be a problem if he does. Well, maybe not, because you fully aren't going to look to remarry. So if you say, I think I'd like to be married in the church. I am Catholic. My faith is meaning very much to me these days, much more than it did 22 plus years ago. So therefore, I would like to be married in the church. Yeah, it comes down to, if she's still entertaining thoughts of a civil divorce, obviously as a Catholic, that would be looked at. I'm assuming, and I might have missed this in the beginning of the call, but I'm assuming that she was Catholic when she got married, but it didn't mean anything to her getting married in a church. So she got married by a justice. So at that point, her marriage would probably be considered invalid. So they've been, in for all intents and purposes, living together for 22 years. My thoughts go out to priests who have to unravel these kinds of situations. If she says, I'm committed to the guy, I'm not going anywhere, however he treats me, however cold the relationship can sometimes be, it's working out for logistical reasons than to do the right thing, I would think the priest would tell her, you get your marriage blessed in the church, then you are sacramentally married. And now it's a situation where you've committed yourself, even though, now this is an interesting sort of thing. Again, the marriage would have to be, there would have to be physical relations at least one time after the blessing. So it's really kind of a complex kind of situation. I'm not really sure exactly what extra I wanted to say about this if it wasn't just that these kinds of situations can become so convoluted the farther you get away from the way our Lord says to do things.
Can a priest ever reveal what he has heard in confession? No, he cannot, the Catechism firmly states. Due to the delicacy and greatness of this ministry and the respect due to persons, the Church declares that the priest must keep all he hears under the seal of the sacrament. Under no circumstances may he disclose what he has heard in confession. Were he to do so, he would face severe church penalties. When he is celebrating the sacrament of penance, the priest is fulfilling the ministry of the Good Shepherd seeking the lost sheep, the Good Samaritan who binds up the wounds, the merciful Father who welcomes home the prodigal son, and the impartial judge whose judgment is just and merciful. The confessor is the servant, not the master of God's forgiveness, leading the penitent to maturity and healing. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Good family discussions don't just happen, they take time. Family talk rituals help families be intentional about making real conversations happen. You need to be intentional if you want to get past exchanges like, "What'd you do in school today?" "Nothing." Believe it or not, when the relationship between parents and kids is healthy, kids naturally want to open up to mom and dad. Kids want to know that their parents care enough to take time to listen and to understand how they're feeling and what they're going through. When parents make time to listen first, kids are more likely to willingly receive what mom and dad have to say. That's why family talk rituals are an important part of Catholic family life. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
No mind doubles here, doing my own thinking. No mental stunt people. Not unusual for guys in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, maybe even into their 60s, to drift towards being workaholics to the exclusion of relationships, to the exclusion of their marriage, to the exclusion of fatherhood. Certainly a number of dads I've talked to have looked back and said, "Oh man, I miss so much. I miss so much because I thought it was just so important that I stack up accomplishments. I thought it was just so important that I make the money so that we could live materially better." And then they have regrets. Sometimes it's tied into their self-image. That's how they're valuable. They see themselves as the provider, and the more they can provide, the better, even though they have to sacrifice many things in their lives that are good. Now, Rose is struggling with her husband in this situation.
Well, my problem is my husband, he used to see a therapist. He saw one for 3 years and didn't help at all with his work addiction. He's actually a lot worse. So, I'm not sure because he's getting older. He's 59 now. Has a lot of health problems, but it's still not slowing him down.
Well, how much is he working, Rose?
I don't see the man. He gets up at around 6 a.m. and I don't see him till like 11:30 at night. Seven days a week.
And it's been this way through your whole marriage?
No, when we've been married over 30 years now, but when we first started, it was if a friend had needed help with something, he would go. And, I mean, some of it is his family, too. They're not helpful. I've tried to talk to them about it. They don't see an issue. They have him run in, too, with a whole bunch of things for them to do and help with, which is good. But, I mean, he's mowing grass on an empty house that nobody's lived in 20 years. So, I mean, for me, it's like I wish they would just sell the stuff and ease his...
Why did he go to therapy for 3 years? Why did he go to therapy for 3 years?
For the work addiction.
So he recognized it as something that controlled him?
Yes, that he just can't stop.
Well,
and that's what he tells me, he can't stop.
I get nervous when somebody uses the word can't, because nobody's holding a gun to his head and saying, you must go to work. Did you have children?
No, uh-uh.
Okay.
We were going to adopt, and actually I backed out of it, because he said, well, if it doesn't work out, then I'll leave, and they'll just be yours. So I called the adoption agency and said, forget it. Because I didn't think that was right, and I was a little too worried about it.
When do you see him?
Before he goes to work in the morning, which he's very grouchy, so that's not easy. And then when he gets home at night, which is only like maybe 10-15 minutes in the morning, 10-15 minutes at night. That's about it.
7 days a week.
That's 7 days a week.
So he doesn't go to church.
That's why I tried to call his family.
He doesn't go to church.
No, he went for about 3 months, and that's about it.
You go to church?
Yes.
Do you think that's foolish or no? That's if that what Rose wants to do, fine. She's living her life.
That's basically what I've had to do. You know, it started out with I used to get really annoyed because if something broke in our house and I would fix it and he would go and help a friend to fix the same thing. But he looks at it as he's teaching me to be independent. So I used to get really upset, but now I don't get upset with things like that anymore.
Let me see if I got what you're telling me. For 30 years of a marriage, you saw your husband at most 1 hour
a
day.
Not at the beginning. No. Not at the beginning. No, this is probably the last 10 years.
Is that a sign that he's becoming disenchanted with marriage?
Well, I was the one that became disenchanted with marriage. Not too much him, but I did because, you know, basically being independent all the time.
Rose, obviously from what you're describing, he doesn't want to change. And I think if you were in my office and we talked a while, I would probably come to some piece of advice that would say, all right, you're going to probably have to live your own life with your own interests, filling up your time and your days. Recognizing that for whatever the reason, and who knows why he's doing this, you're not having a husband there. He's just not there. I think I would ask him. I say, what is this? Don't tell me you can't. Nobody's putting a gun to your head. What is it that you do this? And you ask him, is it me? Is it you want other people to think highly of you? Is it that you just don't like being married and this is the only way you deal with it? What is it? Just tell me, please. I just want to know out of curiosity. And if he dodges you and he says, no, I don't want to talk about it. No, I just have to. I don't know why I do it. I just do it. For whatever the reason, and then you probably heard all that already. For whatever the reason, Rose, if you're asking me, how do I make him stop? I don't know. I have no idea. Because he's been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah, well, in the past, I mean, he used to like to go hunting, fishing, things like that with the guys.
Well, the difference is not the past. The difference is now, Rose. The difference is the last 10 years he's done this. And you got to kind of know if you can for your own peace of mind, and then you're going to have to live, in a lot of respects, a parallel life. Doesn't mean you're divorcing him. It doesn't mean you hate him.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you're going to do. A parallel life. You're going to get involved in church. You're going to volunteer. You're going to do the things you can do to make yourself occupied and happy and content, recognizing until he decides or until he's unable to keep up that pace, nothing will change. Is irrelevant to your peace because it is happening. Whatever the result of it is, it's happening. And you, if you cannot change that other person, and from what Rose was describing, I recognize the call, and it's a common reason for people to come into therapy. Am I missing something that I could say or perhaps do that would change this? And in most cases, there's not. Because you run up against an individual inveterate who says, I'm not changing. There's no motive for me to change. I'm not doing it. Unfortunately, a lot of times in these situations, somebody will threaten divorce as their final leverage to get a person to change. I'm not going to live this way anymore. I'm heading toward divorce. And then sometimes the spouse will say, okay, I'm willing to make some changes or to compromise. But if what Rose says is true, 7 days a week, 6:30 in the morning till 11:30 at night, 17 hours a day, obviously he's doing nothing around their own house. He can't be. Unless he does it outside and doesn't tell her about it, but wherever else he goes, whatever else he does, something is motivating him. Even though he says, I can't, something is motivating him. Whether it's he wants everybody to think, what a guy, you can count on him, boy, what a guy. Or it's, and I'd have to chase this one in therapy, he wants to be away from Rose. For whatever the reason, he views his marriage as, oh boy, I'm trapped. Well, the way to get untrapped is just to not be at home. Could be. Could very well be. It's hard for me to think that the main reason is I just like working 17 hours a day. Got to be something driving him. That doesn't mean he's going to tell Rose. She may just have to live in ignorance about all that. But the one thing she may have to do, as I said in the call, is to live a parallel life. And not fill up her resentment with, he's doing this to me. Now, that may be, but it's irrelevant because he is doing it for whatever his reasons. It's happening. It's like the person who says, well, they shouldn't talk that way. Well, they did talk that way. Well, they're not supposed to. Well, they did. I don't do that to them. Well, they did. And that's so psychologically hard for us to accept. So hard. Because that's not the way that husband is supposed to act. No argument there. I'm not saying it is. I'm just simply saying, if he's that uncooperative, she's stuck. And now she has to turn to, how do I make my own peace in a situation that looks and has been and probably will be unalterable?
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The doctor is in.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jangle.
St. Ignatius of Loyola encourages us in the sixth rule of his 14 rules for the discernment of spirits to practice much examination when we are experiencing spiritual desolation. We may find ourselves in the struggle of spiritual desolation, uncertain as to how it even began. Practicing much examination is to go within our hearts and ask, when did this desolation begin? Instead of distracting ourselves to avoid the difficulty of going within,
Practicing much examination redirects us from diversion and causes us to look at the source of the spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "The much examination that Ignatius counsels here directly counters such flight into diversion. In the time of the spiritual desolation itself, we interiorly stop and ask, am I in spiritual desolation? What action will help me to reject it?"
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
She was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I must tell you that from what I observe from very young people, all of these blasphemers, all of these mockers are in for a tough time. Because the devil bites his own tail. And I find among young people a growing reverence and longing for God. I find a decline in the cynicism and skepticism around. Because it had to destroy itself. No one can live on being an enemy of God. It's too crazy. It's too absurd. It's too dark. It's too bleak. God is beautiful. God is holy. Why in the world mock God?
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Joining me on the Doctor's Inn. This is the end of Look Back Friday. So I'm looking back here on Friday with about 2 minutes left in the program, a little more than 2 minutes. I'm going to do a real quick C.S. Lewis from Letters to an American Lady. He wrote this in 1962. I don't like this thought, but I think he's right. We are all fallen creatures and all very hard to live with. Now, obviously, there's great differences in how hard we are to live with. But I've noticed this from a psychological perspective. I am much quicker to consider someone difficult than I am to consider myself difficult. It is much easier to see the reasons, the flaws, the foibles, the inconsistencies that make them difficult in my mind than it is to look at my own and say, I too am difficult. In one of my books, and I talked about the word difficult, I talk about that's a word we use probably as the most common adjective that is leveled upon people that's hard to get along. They're difficult. Maybe it would be more accurate to say they are difficult for me, because there are a lot of folks who are difficult that other people think they're wonderful. Other people like them a lot. Other people like being around them. Now, of course, this speaks to the variability in behavior across situations and across people. But nevertheless, I always have to keep asking myself, are they really a difficult person in general, across the board, with everybody? And there are folks like that, as far as you know. Pretty much every relationship they have is not smooth, but those are not common. Much more common is someone who is particularly difficult for me. There are aspects about them, their behavior, their personalities, their ways that I find hard to roll with, or that are unpleasant for me, or that challenge me to be more charitable or to be more tolerant. But those very same people don't challenge others. Those very same people, in others' opinions, might be somewhat easy to get along with, even pleasant. Not unusual. People who are difficult are not difficult in all situations or with all people. Oh, shoot. I wanted to extrapolate on that, but not when you got 20 seconds left. This is the end of The Doctor Is In. This is the end of the week of The Doctor Is In. Appreciate so much the company throughout the week. This is a co-production of the Ave Maria Radio Communications and EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. My website is drray.com. I am on Instagram and Facebook, and I certainly enjoy your visiting me there. Appreciate it so very, very much. Thanks, Andrew Krucek. Walk with God. He's not difficult.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.